when you talked about, you know, understanding how the body works in preparation for birth.
Yeah.
And I think I would love you to sort of just say a little note on the mental wellness and preparing that for birth, because of course mental and physical wellness are just an interconnected cycle. And I think we talk a lot about postnatal depression, and that is something that's very important to talk about, but actually preparing yourself mentally and emotionally for birth is hugely important. Hello friends, and thank you for joining me for the Way Forward podcast, brought to you by me, Fliss Goldsmith, and Co-Design Coaching, where we create your optimal life together. Hello and welcome. So today I am so excited to be joined by a phenomenal woman who is the epitome of empowerment, Tara Louise Luke. And she joins us today to talk about the subject of giving birth and the support that is available around that. Tara, welcome to the Way Forward, and thank you for agreeing to be in the studio with me today.
Oh, thank you, Fliss. It's actually a real honour and privilege to be here and to be asked to be interviewed as well. I am quite excited about being here.
That is amazing to hear. So Tara lives in Belper with her husband, who she's been married to for 13 years, and they have two fabulous daughters. She is also the owner of Nest and Nurture, and this year celebrates her 10th year as a birth worker or doula and educator. Tara has supported countless families during pregnancy, birth, and into the postnatal period. She knows when she's done her job well, when a client turns round to her and says, "I did it." And I know this because I am one of them. She gets all warm and fuzzy when clients feel loved, supported, nurtured, and empowered. In her spare time, Tara loves being outside with her family for walks in nature, reading a good book, yoga, baking cake, sunshine, and is a closet science fiction fan, apparently. So, Tara, is that an accurate portrait of you that I've painted there?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate, actually, Fliss. And including the science fiction, the closet science fiction fan, which some people know and some people don't know. People that really, really do know me know that.
I love that. I love to find out a little sort of interesting, fascinating fact about somebody. Do you want to know a fascinating fact about me?
Oh, go on.
My name's not actually Fliss. It's Rebecca.
That does not fit at all, actually.
I'm just going to leave the listeners with that, and I'll explain it in another episode. But my actual given name on my birth certificate is Rebecca.
Wow.
So that's a new fact for everyone today.
Including me.
Yeah, including you. So, Tara, I'm fascinated by the human body and its ability to birth tiny people. I've done it twice myself, and I always stand in awe of all people who give birth for their strength, their courage, their power. Now, you've dedicated yourself to serving and supporting people throughout their pregnancy and birth. But take me back to where all this started for you and your journey.
Yeah. It actually started with my first pregnancy. So when I was pregnant with my first daughter, I thought it was fascinating. Mm. I became quite, so in some people's terms, hyper-focused on pregnancy, understanding what was happening, understanding more about birth, understanding more about what the human body was capable of. So I became a little obsessed, really. And doing all of that research and reading and understanding didn't depart after I gave birth to her. So for a lot of people, they go through a phase in their life and they become focused at that point. And then once they've had the baby and they've gone into their postnatal life, they leave it behind. It didn't happen for me. So I couldn't understand why at 9 or 10 months postnatal with my first baby, why I was still watching birth videos, still reading books, still reading through articles, still doing research into understanding kind of birth more. And then it dawned on me that maybe that was why that I had found a new passion, but it wasn't leaving.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like a real purpose, not just a passion, a purpose. And then I decided, right, I'm going to do something about this. What do I do though? So I looked at various different training organisations that could train me as an antenatal teacher at first, so that I could teach classes to people. So I think it was about four different organisations I looked at. And the one that resonated the most is the one I ended up going for. They don't exist anymore, actually.
Oh.
I know, because obviously when you and I met, I was teaching kind of for them, if you like. So yeah, they don't exist. They folded last year in 2023. So I signed up with them, did a training course, but I signed, so this is an interesting little fact as well.
Okay.
So I signed up with them after deliberating for about 9 or 10 months more. So it wasn't like I made an immediate decision.
No, you know, full consideration of the facts.
Yes. So it's just like 10 months postnatal with my first. It took me another like 9 or 10 months to go, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is unusual for me because normally I'm more action orientated. So obviously this was a big life change.
Yeah.
And phoned them up, signed on the dotted line to do the training, and then went home. And within about, I think it was about 2 weeks, I peed on the stick and found out I was pregnant again.
Oh, here we go again.
So I told them and said, so I'm having training, but I'm expecting, is that going to be like an issue? And they were like, how is that going to be an issue? Because you're going to be teaching people who are also pregnant. Actually, you're going to get a really good experience of being pregnant whilst learning this information. Mm. It's not an issue. Unless it's an issue for you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it's not an issue for me. So I went along, did the training. It was like 5 days immersing yourself and everything, what we call birthy in the birth world, everything kind of pregnancy and birthy. And it was fantastic. Made a lot of friends while I was there. In fact, one of them I'm still friends with, and she's still doing her thing 10 years later. And then went off to teach. So as you can imagine, I'm about 24 weeks at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, so how am I going to go and like teach this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did 2 terms, and this is, again, another story for you. So I thought, I'm going to do 2 terms, which is 12 weeks, okay?
Yeah.
So I fit in 12 weeks before I give birth. And I do 1 term in Belper, 1 term in Derby, and I managed to get, like, 12 weeks in.
Mm.
And the last night that I'm teaching, which is on a Monday night, I say to all of the people that gather, so I'll see you on the other side, because obviously, like, I'm getting really, really close. And I thought, I'll be fine, because her due date's, like, Thursday.
Oh, okay. All that way away. Thursday.
So I'm fine. Yeah. Monday night, teaching this class, and can feel things, you know, kind of occurring. You and I both know as like niggles and twinges.
Yeah.
Finish the class, really happy, pack up the car, get home, and then I have her the next day.
Oh my goodness. That... Honestly, I'm just thinking back to both my pregnancies, but by the time I got to 30 weeks, I was just waddling around, like, moaning all the time, not able to, like, do anything. So that is incredible to work all that way through. But it must have been amazing to be surrounded by other pregnant people all the time.
Awesome, because you were feeling what they were feeling to a certain extent. Obviously, everybody handles pregnancy differently.
Of course.
I always bear that in mind because I always have a mixture of people when I'm teaching in my class.
Yeah.
That some people are going to have a really, really like sail through pregnancy and not get hardly any symptoms, and others will really, really struggle with it right from the beginning or towards the end in particular, like you just said.
Yeah.
So did all of that, had my baby. And I'd always said during this training with my husband, this isn't going to be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
That deep down, I want to be a doula. And not a lot of people knew what a doula was at that point in time.
No, I mean, that's actually something I was going to touch on, because it's something that I know what it is, but only because you have explained it to me previously. And I'm sure there are people in the audience, some of whom will know and some of whom will be unsure what a doula is and what they do. So, you know, I would love it if you could explain to us what it is that a doula does, which sounds like a Julie Andrews tongue twister. What it is that a doula does. The full extent of your work as a doula.
So if you're really lucky, you could have the same midwife throughout your pregnancy and see them for all of the antenatal appointments that you have. You could then have the same midwife through labour and birth and maybe even postnatally. That's really, really uncommon within the NHS. It's very likely that you'll have different midwives during your antenatal appointments. You'll see someone differently and during labour and birth, and then see different midwives in the postnatal period. So doulas are a single point of contact or provide continuity of care. Sometimes people go into pregnancy, particularly for the first time, and think they're going to get that from their midwifery appointments and they're going to find that via their midwife, which is really unfortunate. So I think sometimes the expectation is that they'll have this consistency throughout, but the reality is not the case at all. And that can be really disappointing for people being pregnant for the first time, because they have this impression that the midwife is the person that is going to necessarily supply that care. So often it's just medical care. So that's how midwives are different. Midwives do provide emotional support and practical support too, but there is a lot of things that they need to do. There's a lot of paperwork, there's a lot of procedures, there's a lot of policies that apply. It makes it really difficult to actually do the what some people might see as the midwifery role.
Yes, yes, that sort of going back to that very sort of emotional, connected kind of care. And it's given me a really good picture, and it's clear to me that there are a myriad of benefits to having a doula, especially where, you know, choices are concerned. But I guess the question I've got to ask is, why would someone seek out a doula when the maternity care on the NHS is free?
Good question. So a lot of people say that, but actually it's not free, is it?
Okay. Yeah. Explain.
So do you pay taxes?
Yes.
Okay, and you pay national insurance?
I do.
Okay, so where did that go?
Back into the public services, like the NHS.
So do you, is the NHS free?
Not really, no.
No. So it's free at what we call free at point of access, meaning that you can go in, and if you need something, so emergency, so you hurt your leg or you like break a bone, you'll go in and you'll be treated for free, right?
Yeah.
But you have kind of paid for some of that. So free at point of access, absolutely, but it doesn't mean it's completely free.
That's a really interesting way of reframing it, yeah.
Okay. Now, yes, some people would say, well, why would I pay in addition? So I always see it as an addition rather than actually NHS is free. Good point. But what other things in life would we maybe pay for that are worth it?
Completely.
So we might pay for another service, okay, that might be free somewhere else, but actually we want something a little bit different. So we want something specialised. We might also pay because we have had an experience that hasn't been ideal the first time around. And we think, I am worth it and I'm worthy of having a different experience. And I feel that if I got additional support and I had somebody that was consistent, that actually I would get a different experience. And it doesn't mean, oh, I'm going to get a positive experience, or we don't guarantee any experience because we can't, because that's not life. But people will do something because they think, this can make a difference to me. I can feel more in control. So by having somebody with you and being present with you, it gives somebody a sense of empowerment. It makes somebody feel that they can do it, and they are at the heart of their care, they are at the heart of their birth experience. That's very different than perhaps an experience they might have had before, where they might have felt powerless and as if they didn't have the control. So it's not a control of like, because everybody says it's interesting control, isn't it? Because it isn't like they are in control all the way through labour, because you and I both know, okay, that the body takes over. So it's not that. It's more a case of, I am in control of perhaps the decisions I've made before. Somebody's going to hold that space for me to know my decisions and know what's important to me, so I can actually let go of that control during that experience. And in turn, that gives them a sense of control. It's very strange when you think about it.
I always think about it as well in terms of, you know, we were just talking actually before we were recording about the fact that it's almost that sense of permission that we've been sort of almost educated out of. And I know with my first birth, I didn't have any other ideas outside of, you know, find out you're pregnant, you go to the doctors, you get booked your midwife appointment, you attend the midwife appointments, and you follow what you're told to do. And it was very much a case of rabbit in headlights. I mean, I'd planned to be pregnant, but it, actually being pregnant is a very, you know, very different experience to the thought of being pregnant. I suffered with morning sickness right the way up to 20 weeks with Erin. And so I felt pretty rough. And so I just kind of bobbed along and did what I was told. And it wasn't, you know, I didn't have anything terrible happen to me. But I actually want to touch upon the birth of Erin, because I had a 72-hour labour. It was long and it was hard and I felt utterly, utterly powerless. Mm. And because of my pre-existing medical conditions, I was strapped to lots of monitors. I was laid on my back in a bed and just surrounded by people buzzing in and out and saying lots of things that I didn't really understand, medical terms to do with birth that I'd never heard of before. And I was just really frightened and I was in agony. And because it had gone on so long, I just, you know, give me the drugs, you know, inject me with whatever is going to make this pain stop. And I didn't feel like I had any of the power. I was just absolutely at the mercy of somebody help me. And eventually they had to get her out by forceps. And it wasn't the way I wanted it to go down, but I was so exhausted and she was getting exhausted. And it was just get her here safely. So then with my second birth, with Rod, obviously I worked with you and it was a totally different kettle of fish where I was able to say, oh my goodness, I've got choices. I can lie in a different position. I can ask for different pain relief. I could take a bath in the middle of this if I want to. And the difference it made, I cannot tell people listening, just to know that I had those choices. That's the experience I would have wanted for, you know, Erin's birth. And I think, you know, what I want to sort of ask you is, you know, in terms of people you've worked with, do you feel like they've come back to you and said that working with a doula is something that gives them that sense of power, that empowerment in their birth?
Yes, even if it doesn't go according to the first original ideal plan that they had in their mind. Some people will go from, and this is an interesting point about plans, everybody thinks there's one, there isn't. There's often multiple plans when I'm working with a client. And even if it didn't go to original plan A and it wasn't even B and it was C, yes, they do. And it comes down to the fact it's how they felt about the experience. Mm-hmm. And it isn't about how someone else might judge it or how someone else might see it. A sense of being in the power, stepping into that power and whichever kind of scenario that might play out to be during their birth experience. That's really important.
Yeah.
If we don't feel that we are in that position of power, then we can feel very, very disappointed and in some cases traumatized by our birth experience. And listening, so all the listeners that are listening to Fliss's birth experience, that's tough, Liz. That's a really tough experience to go through. And feeling like things were done to you, feeling like people were coming in and out of that room, that you wanted someone to stop it for you and to be saved, feels to me that someone wasn't paying attention to you in that situation. They weren't looking at you as an individual. And that's the difference. As a doula, I am looking at the person and their partner and centering them. And as much as I would love to think that the NHS does that for all the people that go into maternity services, in some cases, it isn't always possible to center the individual. So they're providing care, absolutely. So this isn't about scaring or frightening people in terms of the care level. This is about understanding that everybody's different. And as an individual, it's very difficult to individualize care for all the people that walk through those doors.
Absolutely.
When you have somebody with you, you are understanding of your client. You can individualize what support you provide, but also you're looking at them, you're placing them in the position of power. I always think, so that my clients are like queens.
Yeah.
Okay. And that they are ruling that space. I am there to support them in that position of authority.
Yeah.
Okay. And that position of power, and that they hold the power. And when you do that from, I don't know, from a support point of view, but also from an energetic point of view, it can change the way that that person feels in that space, but also it places them in that position automatically. So it's not even like they have to strive for it.
Yes, it's provided, that mm-hmm. space is provided for them. And, you know, I can quite honestly say that anyone, if they want to work with Tara, you should do, because you do feel like a queen. And when I gave birth to Rod, even before the labour started, and when it did start, I wasn't scared the second time. And it wasn't because I'd already done it. It was because I knew that I could make decisions. And it didn't go exactly according to plan. I'd hoped that I wouldn't need any pain relief, but I did do. So, you know, that was fine, because I could still choose the position I gave birth in. I could still decide to get up and off the bed when I wanted to. And, you know, I was laid in a bath at one point with, you know, at the birthing center, people came in, and it was, you know, I had that agency over
yes.
an experience that can be traumatic, because the changes the body goes through in birth are enormous isn't even a big enough word. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the power the human body has to birth another human is enormous. And so, you know, just to have the agency to say, hang on a second, this is what I'd like. You know, I'd actually like a drink right now, or I'd actually like to move around right now. It sounds really simple, but you can feel that is taken away from you if you are in that room where medics are just flying about. And as you say, sometimes that's absolutely necessary. But I don't feel, in my case the first time round, it was. I feel that you can have a very busy day that you've given birth on, and they were, you know, trying to get beds and people sorted. But if there's anyone listening now that is pregnant or is thinking about becoming pregnant or supporting someone who's giving pregnant, could you give them any advice? What would you say to them now if they were, you know, starting or thinking about or supporting a birth journey? What advice would you give to them?
Oh, advice. Interesting. So it's the one thing that, as a doula, we kind of don't do is give advice. We give support, we give information, but we don't tell somebody what to do. However, I can make some suggestions of perhaps things that are going to help people feel more confident, maybe.
Excellent.
Maybe a starting place for them to start to think about their birthing journey, maybe.
Yeah.
So, learning about themselves, understanding themselves, understanding what kind of person they are. So, are they, underneath it all, a people pleaser? Because if they are, then having somebody that can advocate for them in some circumstances can be useful. Or are they not? Are they quite different? Or what kind of experience in their mind is ideal for them? Start thinking about what it is they want from the birth. Is it just a baby at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, is it, how do they want to feel during that birth experience? What does that look like? Knowing that how they feel during that birth experience and then afterwards will have a long-term, if not lifetime, impact.
Mm-hmm.
When I speak to people and they are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s, they remember how they felt during their birth experience.
Yeah, I can say that that's absolutely true, because Erin's 11 now, and even talking about it, I can feel those emotions inside me right now, and that's 11 years on.
So know yourself very, very well. What is it that is going to make you feel confident during pregnancy, during labour, during birth?
Mm-hmm.
So self-knowledge and awareness. Trust. Building self-trust. How can you do that? There are many, many ways, and we could do a whole podcast, me and Fliss, on how to build self-trust.
Yeah.
Sometimes we trust somebody outside of ourselves more than we trust ourselves.
Mm.
The one time and the one opportunity that you have in your life during pregnancy and birth is to build self-trust, to build your own inner confidence and awareness, instinct, if you like, intuition, because by the time we step forward into motherhood or parenthood, we are going to be responsible for that baby and that child. We're going to be using our self-knowledge, our trust, and our intuition and our instinct, aren't we, long-term.
Yeah.
Because there are, I know there are parenting manuals out there, like in parenting books, but ultimately the way that we parent is often based on ourselves, our self-knowledge, our knowledge of our child, and you have this opportunity in pregnancy. In fact, pregnancy in general encourages you to build that.
I think that's really interesting. I've never sort of thought about it in terms of it pregnancy offering you the opportunity to get to trust yourself, because you're right. And actually, I would love to do another episode with you about self-trust, because we do often outsource trust to other people.
Right.
And actually, it's coming home to that trust of yourself. And pregnancy is the perfect opportunity for that if you've got the support,
yes,
to do it, which obviously is what you provide.
Because it's very easy for us to outsource the expertise to somebody that is outside of ourselves. So even people could do that with me, which I would encourage them not to. They can do that certainly with a midwife or a medical professional, couldn't they?
Absolutely.
And absolutely, they are qualified. They have been educated. They have spent many years understanding medical side and care and support for people giving birth. But they're not that person.
No.
So you have an opportunity in pregnancy to build self-trust. And then I guess understanding about how your body works.
Yes. Back to biology lessons.
Back to physiology.
Yeah.
So understand how your body works during labour and birth. What does it need, okay, to give birth? If you want to give birth straight in a straightforward way, so we call that physiological birth.
Yeah.
If you're aiming for that, really understand how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Understand what the body needs, understand what kind of support you need as an individual, but also your body needs to give birth to your baby. You can access the information either via book, podcast, you can do education, you can go on a course, you can do classes, you can even do hypnobirthing.
Yeah.
All of those things are accessible, and I don't want to be elitist or ableist, because these come in many different forms.
Mm.
So in other words, somebody might feel like don't want to do a class or a course, and perhaps they don't want to access that information via a book, but there are plenty of ways of educating yourself in your ears.
Yes, absolutely.
There are ways of understanding things in a different way. So there are videos that you can watch. There's lots of different ways that you can understand that information. When you get that, so you've got that self-awareness and trust, you have self-knowledge, and you have understanding of how the body works and a really good understanding of what kind of support you want, that's going to be a really good foundation.
Yeah.
Then for stepping into labour and birth. And then my other point would be to understand what things you're going to be offered.
Yes.
Okay, during labour and birth, what the policy is, or what the not necessarily the medical procedure, but what the policies are of your local trust. And I'd even suggest that people start to look at the statistics that are produced by their local trust.
Mm.
So they get an understanding of the birth that they are aiming for and whether that matches the outcomes that are being displayed.
Yeah, because these are things that you just don't even consider when, you know, especially if it's a first birth, because you're overwhelmed with the kind of, you know, hopefully the joy and excitement of
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And all of these things, you know, we need to make them more accessible and talking about them so that people have that awareness and that knowledge. And actually, one point just before we finish, which I hadn't necessarily put down as a specific point, but I think it's so interesting, is when you talked about, you know, understanding how the body works in preparation for birth.
Yeah.
And I think I would love you to sort of just say a little note on the mental wellness and preparing that for birth, because of course mental and physical wellness are just an interconnected cycle. And I think we talk a lot about postnatal depression, and that is something that's very important to talk about, but actually preparing yourself mentally and emotionally for birth is hugely important.
So I teach a particular class that does all of those things together, actually.
Absolutely amazing.
It's everybody would perhaps consider it to be like a pregnancy yoga class. It isn't really. It's a birth preparation class where we move but we also start to put in information, but also start to get people to believe in themselves and sow seeds of confidence rather than seeds of doubt, and mentally prepare. And there are many, many ways to do that. It's not just my class that would provide that information or provide that mental preparation. I'd also say some of the things that I would consider for people in terms of mentally preparing or allowing themselves to kind of, how do I describe it? So other people talk about it as, so how can we have a good mindset or a positive mindset, or how can we feel well during pregnancy or mentally well? And so it's not just my class, but things like really basic things like going outside, walking, even taking shoes off, putting your feet on the ground, having times when you're taking time out, where you're relaxing, where you're talking to your baby. Talking to your baby actually is more important than people think. And it might feel daft at first, particularly if you're talking out loud to them, but actually can really form a connection with them and you. Because you are one at that point in time.
Absolutely.
And it was something I was listening to yesterday on another podcast, strange enough, about how the baby experiences birth and the baby experiences pregnancy and how important it was that we talk to our babies while they're in utero.
That is, and I'm just, you carry on in a second, but I'm going to out my husband here, because when I was pregnant, me and him used to read Dear Teddy Robinson books.
That's awesome.
To Erin and Rod, and they're going to be cringing at this point. There we go. But sorry, carry on. Yeah, so talking to baby, very, very important.
Yes, to build that connection between you and them. To spend some time out, 5 minutes a day of actually breathing and practicing breathing. Not only is that really, really good for your physical well-being, but also really good for your emotional and mental well-being. Yeah. I remember that you had, it's Maya.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
That was talking about breath work.
She did. She came on, did a lovely podcast on breath work. Yeah.
Actually, that is really, really important in pregnancy. So whilst I do that with people in classes that I teach, I also encourage them to practice that and to incorporate that as a daily practice at home, 5 minutes a day. I believe it's 3 minutes of using breath work or conscious breathing that you actually go into your parasympathetic.
Yes, breathwork's literally changed my life. It has helped me through trauma and all sorts of things. I can't recommend it highly enough.
So I would also say the same thing. So that if people can practice being in that part of their response, so instead of being in like our active and alert response, which is where we spend, unfortunately, most of our time, being in the parasympathetic, because doing that on a daily basis, building that up over a period of time, you're creating a muscle memory. It then becomes much, much easier to access that space than during labour and birth. And actually that helps massively with your physical health, your emotional health and your mental well-being too. And starting to build confidence on a daily basis too. Affirmations, I encourage people to have those around the house. I think you and I would both agree having them just around anyway, right?
Absolutely.
Outside of pregnancy.
Yeah. Affirmations changes the landscape emotionally completely.
And it's not even just about having them around, is it? It's about actually reading them, saying them out loud and repeating on a continual basis. Because interestingly enough, our brains have a negative bias, which I'm presuming you know as well.
Yeah.
So we convince ourselves, don't we, as a survival tactic and a prevention
measure. The negative is the true, is the fact.
Is the fact. So you have to work doubly hard or triply hard to kind of rewire the brain to think in a slightly different way, which means practice makes permanent.
Yes.
And you have to keep practicing and building muscle memory. And this is really, really applicable when we think about affirmation, isn't it?
Absolutely, because the brain has that, you know, neuroplasticity. So it can rewire those neural pathways if you know, it's a continuous practice.
Yes, a continuous practice. And something that actually pregnancy gives you the opportunity to do, doesn't it? Because you have what most people would say 9 months, I say 10 months.
Yes.
To practice building that positive mindset and to change the way that you think, because you will have been fed for how long? How many years do you think that you have messages about labour and birth.
Well, you're building those messages right from when you're a child yourself.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you're seeing other people, older people birthing, and you're going through school with particular messages. So, yeah.
Probably, what, preteen, do you think?
Yeah.
So preteen.
Yeah.
And then by the time that you come to have a baby yourself, what, maybe average age, I think it's like 31.
Yeah, so you're going to have like 20 years.
Right. So you have to unwrite 20 years.
Yeah.
That's that huge. In 10 months? Yeah. It's huge,
it's
isn't
huge.
It?
And so, actually, if you can do that, you know, that then, and this is a whole other podcast, but that then feeds in, we'll be here all week. That then feeds into how you parent your children. Because if mm-hmm. you are, you know, working on your own emotional and mental well-being, wellness, and doing those affirmations and changing that negative bias into a positive one, you're going to then raise your children in that environment, which is so much, you know, no offense to my parents or anybody else's parents, but being raised in the 80s and 90s, we didn't have that. We didn't have any of that.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I often think that when we have a situation such as the rites of passage, because some people would describe giving birth as a rites of passage for us, that when we go through that and we come out of that rites of passage feeling like we did it, on top of the world, or on a massive rush, that we're powerful, we go into parenting thinking all those things.
Yes.
Everybody deserves that opportunity, don't they, to think like that about themselves. So then it prepares them for that parenting journey where they feel confident,
that
they feel that I can do this, even if, you know, like parenting, like it's hard at times, you know, it's challenging. And oh my gosh, it's the best thing I ever did as well.
Completely.
At the same time.
Yeah.
So if we feel those things going into parenting, it provides such a good base to work from as parents going forward. And I think this is where pregnancy and birth gives us that opportunity, doesn't it? To step into that and actually then to step forward as parents and as people.
As women, as people. Because we're growing all the time and that never stops. You know, I hit 40 last year and the amount of people who go, oh, you know, I don't want to hit 40. I flipping love being 40. It's like this new freedom of I'm just going to be me. And I, you know, I'm learning to find who I actually am again. And I think we're always growing and it should never be, you know, something that we put away. Like you don't stop doing your affirmations after pregnancy and it's a lifelong practice. And the benefits are just, you know, enormous. So Tara, I can't thank you enough for your time and sharing your inspiring experiences and the amount of support you've given to people over the years, the empowerment for all those parents. So I just want to extend a final thank you for using your incredible energy to come here and talk to me today.
Oh, no, it's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
I'm going to put all your contact information in the show notes. So if there's anybody listening who is thinking about exploring working with a doula or anything surrounding pregnancy and birth and the support that is available, they can contact Tara. And if you are ready to prioritise you and work on anything relating to your emotional well-being and empowerment in a fully supported way, of course, then just head over to codesignwithfliss.com and we can talk more about the future that you hope for. So that is it for today. Thank you so much for listening. Now we know more about having an empowered and supported birth, and now we know the way forward. Thank you.